session number 11970 reads.
Mr. Birtwistle, Reel 8. You were telling me about a fighting patrol raid-style thing, which you didn't really see had any purpose.
No.
What exactly happened then? How did you prepare?
Well, we had to go over the top, and we took this time, but there wasn't a shell fired, there wasn't a bullet fired. We went over and took the trench, and nothing at all happened all day.
Did you have any special equipment to do this job?
Well, only our bombs and what have you, but... No, we hadn't, because we hadn't to do any fighting at all, they said. We'd just to go to this trench and occupy the trench, and at night, just as it's going dark, this smoke screen came over. And, Jove, of course it didn't, I suppose they expected it to come as far as the trenches, but they hadn't, and they had to come out, the Germans came out, mass formation out of the blooming, the smoke screen. So we had to, he said, all right, bolt, and we had to bolt back again. And one lad, a lad called Robinson, he was the only one that was missing when we got back to the trenches. There wasn't a bullet fired, not one, I couldn't understand it at all. But this Robinson, he was missing. Now, he came back just before dawn the following morning. And I said, what have you been like? And he said, well, I slipped back in the trench. You know, when we were getting back over the trench, he slipped back into the trench. He said, and the Germans were on top of us before, you know, so it was as though he were dead. He said he just lay there as though he were dead. And he says, they just come and they looked at me and walked away. And anyway, he when the Germans had passed him or something, he got up and went over the trench and he just got back in our trenches just as dawn broke. I could never understand reason why for that at all, because there was no sense in it, sending us over the top, because we could have been annihilated.
You know? So you went over in the morning...
Yes.
And then you occupied the German trench during the day. Until dusk,
and then
you ran back.
Yes. But it was
sent. But you didn't open fire at the Germans when you saw them.
No, we hadn't to do, he said. The officer, he said that were orders. We hadn't to fire. We had to just return to our trenches. But it seemed useless to me. I could never understand the reason at all. There was no sense in it.
Do you remember any other raids or things like that?
Well, yeah, I remember them, but some were too grotesque to
talk
about.
Okay, well, let's leave that then, because I see that's upsetting you a bit. What about, how long would you be in the front line?
About 4 days. Usually 4 days and 4 days in reserve, you know.
And the reserve lines were how far back?
Oh, it all depends. It all depends. Sometimes 200 or 300 yards, another time they'd be half a mile nearly.
And would there be support trenches as well?
The support trenches, yeah. Well, that's what I mean in reserve. Reserve, we're further back, you know.
So you'd spend 4 days there, 4 days...
That's right, yeah.
Did you get more artillery fire in the reserve or support trenches?
Well, it all depends. If there was going to be a raid or anything, of course, if you were in the front line, you got the beginning of the raid, because immediately your party opened fire onto the German's front line, he opened fire onto your front line. And then, I mean to say, they lifted the barrage to the supports or reserve line then, you know. That's you got shells everywhere. It didn't matter where you were. And then the big guns opened out at the back, you know, onto the supports or the reserves at the back.
And so you had the 8 days, and the other 4 days, would you be in rest or right
out?
Oh,
yes, yeah, I'd be out in rest.
Would that be another 4 days?
Yes. We the place we were in some 60-foot dugouts. When I told you that raid on that when that aeroplane came over, we were in the 60-foot dugouts then, and of course then were the front lines. But there were some 60-foot behind, you know, 60-foot dugout where you used to go down. Oh yeah, and if you in reserve behind there, yeah. Sometimes it were half a mile, sometimes a mile back, you know. It all depends where the party were.
And when you were out on rest, you said you had to get yourself properly cleaned up.
Oh, cleaned up, yeah.
Did the men resent that at all, or did they?
Well, they did. They used to resent it, but I mean to say they did it because it was only natural to yourself, wasn't it? They didn't like, well, I know I didn't. I didn't like being dirty or scruffy or anything.
How did you get on with it? We've talked about the recreations when you were at Courcelles, I presume you did the same. How did you get on with the Belgians, civilians?
Well, we didn't meet the Belgians much. We didn't, because they'd all evacuated, you know, from them places. Wasn't a lot of. Where we were all right, I mean to say, because like at Ypres, you came out of the line to Poperinge. And well, there was civilians there, and they were making chips and egg and chips and things, you know, and our troops were going and buying them.
Right. So, are there any in this period between sort of Christmas and the big German attack?
Yeah.
Are there any other stories you remember that, from that time before we move into that big attack?
Yeah, I remember. I remember coming. We were in the line. It was quiet. There's nothing and nothing doing. Oh dear, I've forgotten the place now. Yeah, I think it was Givenchy where we were. And we'd been in the line, you know. And over Christmas and New Year, in reserves and front line, changing over. And when we came out, we had our Christmas dinner. I couldn't tell you what it was now, I believe me, I've forgotten all about the dinner, but I remember the officers coming down and helping the sergeants to feed, you know, to give the chap the Christmas dinner. And in the evening, the officers, they had a party at a big estaminet there. And, of course, sergeants, the RSM came round, right, Sergeant, Sergeant Birtwistle, tonight, the officers' party, you know. Well, we had to go down and wait on the officers then, down there. And not only that, but they had us for the singing party, you know. We had to entertain them. And I used to sing a song, The Thrashing Machine, a Bobby one, you know. And so, anyway, the sergeant major, he said, during the evening, like when we were in our party and the what it was on, and there was two Belgian girls behind the bar, a blondie and a brunette, and their father was there serving the drinks. And I remember this, the sergeant major shouting out, like regimental sergeant major, he said, right, Sergeant Birtwistle, it's your turn. So I went down to the front and I said, right, I said, oh, I'll give you a Glorious Devon, you know. So the sergeant's behind shouts, Thrashing Machine, you know. I said, no, Glorious Devons are like. So he said, oh, yes, Glorious Devon. So I sang Glorious Devon. And then, of course, all that were entertaining. Well, then a bit after, he shouts at me again, like. So I said, right, I'll give you the green eye of the little yellow god, you know. So I said to the colonel, like, green eye of the little yellow god. He said, oh, yes, right, I'll start it. So I give him green eye of the little yellow god. Of course, after that, a while, finishing up, he shouts at me again, you see. So Thrashing Machine, the sergeants all shouts, Sergeant, Thrashing Machine, I said, no, not thresher machine, sir. I said, I forget what it was. I said to him, I'm going to sing for them. But he says, thresher machine, you know, the colonel. So, of course, I had to give him thresher machine. Of course, they were tickled pink. So, anyway.
Wanted to do it, because it was rude.
Well, I didn't like doing it in front of all the officers, you know. But anyway, I had to sing this thresher machine. Well, this blondie, she says, I will never sing you one. So she could speak pretty well, you know, broken English. So she came out and sang, and she sang, oh dear, Zule's Affair. So, oh yes, Bonnie Francis, Zule's Affair, Zule's Affair. Oh yes, Bonnie Francis, a pris la guerre, promenade, Angleterre. But it was like do Donnamy for a Piccaninny and different things in it. Come on. So after the show was over, right, we were clearing up, and this blondie came to me, and she says, "Vous teach me thrashing machine, me teach you Zule's Affair." You know. Anyway, I said, no, I wouldn't teach you that. Anyway, I used to go down and have a drink, and then she'd come out. And so I taught her, and she taught me Zule's Affair, you know. Peculiar, really.
I wonder now if we could go on to the movements that led up to to the big battle when the Germans attacked.
Well, we just got to Courcelles. And then we had orders. We were in Courcelles. We were waiting for orders, and we got orders later on when it was in the evening. Late in the evening, it was going dark anyway. And we got orders to move up to a place called. And as we were going down the road to Blainsville, the soldiers were coming back wounded and. They'd been bashed out of Blainsville. They said, you can't get in Blainsville. Germans are in Blainsville.
So you were travelling in buses, weren't you?
Well, we got off the bus at Courcelles, you know, and we'd been waiting in Courcelles for orders what we had to do. And this was a movement that we got orders to move into Blainsville, you see. And as we went down into a range, he fell down the road, these wounded and they were all coming out again. And they said that the range had been occupied with Germans. And our company sergeant major, our company officer, Captain Hodge, he sent the stretcher bearers down to help them. Do you see it, a Blainsville? They sent four stretcher bearers over, but we never saw them again. They must have been captured or something. We didn't have any further order. A notification of what they did at all. Anyway, then we stayed there, and then we had orders from the runner came from headquarters and said that we had to take up a trench on our right, in the main road, off the main road, and a trench on the right-hand side, which was on the incline of a hill, and it was about halfway up the hill. Well, when we got in there, the pioneers and what they were occupying that trench, they were because of, you know. Anyway, when
was it on the reverse slope from the Germans or on the fall?
On the fall to the Germans, down to the fall of the hill, into a valley, and was occupying it. So of course, when we went in, they went, the pioneers, they went back again out of the road. Anyway, we were there till the following morning, and we were waiting for something to happen, you know. But in the meantime, there was a hill in front, directly in front of us, and then a valley on the left-hand side, leading to another hill behind, and then there was another hill on the up again, you know, and we could see the through the down in the valley on the hill at the back. It was absolutely, it was just as though it was alive with grey, you know, the grey uniforms of the Germans. They were coming down in mass formation. Well, at 10 minutes to 12, dinner time, or before that.
You know what date it was?
Had the 23rd, I think, somewhere around the 23rd, I think. And though in the morning, during the morning, a lot of Scots soldiers were coming down, all, little piggledy. They're coming away from the hill on straight facing, as you see. And we could see the shells bursting on the top of the hill. And they were coming away. They said that our artillery were dropping short, and they knocked them out of the line. Anyway, it wasn't that at all, because the Germans had advanced on the right, and they'd advanced and they were firing back again onto the hill where our troops were occupying. You see, anyway, the Scots regiment came down, so the captain said the colonel. Came down with these lads, and they were just going anyway at the back. And he said, excuse me, he says, get your men organised. He says, we'll stop here till you get organised and get back again in position behind us. Like on, there was a sunken road a bit behind them. And he said, you get in the sunken road at the top of the hill, and then we'll retire behind you if you'll let us know when you've got organised in the drawer. So at 10 minutes to 12, there was two Uhlans came over the top on horseback, their helmets shining and coming along, galloping down this hillside. And so I got two Lewis guns there, and I said to the Lewis gun, to one of them, I said, mark your sights at 200 yards. I said, you 250. And I said, don't fire until I tell you. Because I marked out like about what I thought was 250 yards, 250. And so I'm watching these Hurons coming down the hill on their with my field glasses, what do they call them?
Binoculars,
yeah, with these field binoculars that I had. Of course, when I thought there was about 200 yards, you know, between Duke and 200, I said, right, fire. And I was watching, and I could see the bullets hitting the ground, sending the dust up at the horse's feet. And one of them, it lifted it up and it threw its rider, it lifted its front feet up and threw the rider, and then it bolted off back. Well, of course, the other one took off back as well. And I'm really glad we did stop them, you know, that, because I think we'd had the Uhlans on us. Anyway, after that, they weren't long before they started coming down in open formation, the Germans, you know. Like we do, you know, advancing in open formation. A few would go for a few yards and then they'd get down. And then, you know, and the next lot would come through them and get down. And down in the valley, right in the valley, there was a big corrugated iron hut. I suppose it had stores in there. I didn't know nothing about this hut until we were there. So I don't know what it occupied. But anyway, they were going in the hut. All that came down this hillside was dashing in this hut. So this were going on till dark anyway. Well, about, I think it was nearly midnight when we had orders that the Scots were in position behind us, you see. So Captain Hodgie says, right, he says, we've got to retire now and get behind the Scots, in position behind the Scots. So it was moonlight, and the moon was shining down, and on our right, running along on the right-hand side, there was a hedge. So I said to him, I said, if we get out of the trench at the edge, I said, they won't be able to see us because we'll be under the edge of the shadow of the hedge. So we went back, passed down, and all the lads came out, and Captain Hodge, just when they got the last lad out, I said, we're not leaving these two panniers on these two guns, are we? I said, we'll open we'll use these. So he took one gun and I took the other, and we fired into this corrugated iron nut, all we could put into it, you know. Then we retired past down the side, on this hedge side, and got up onto the top again. And then when we got up onto the top...
While you've been in that forward trench,
yeah,
had you been under much fire? You've seen the Germans.
We weren't under much fire. We fired one or two rounds, you know, but I said, save your ammunition, because we hadn't any, you know. And they were coming over, and we could see these. Ooh, it was absolutely mass formation down in the valley, these juries.
Neither side was firing much.
Well, no, there wasn't much firing going on. We only emptied these two magazines, you know, when we were going out of the trench at the finish. That were all. And then we went along under the edge, onto this to the road, and the Scottish. When our lads were going along the top of the road, the jurors charged the trench where we were, and of course they opened the machine guns. And a lot of our lads were wounded in the legs on the, you know, in the top of this road, because it was only just a little slightly sunken road. It was very shallow, you know. Anyway, after that we got back in position at the behind, and when morning came, there were no Scots there. We were there on our own, and we're only about 8 paces apart on this open ground, you know, on the plains really. It's of ourselves. We're retiring all day, getting up and running back, and then next, you know, when we'd advance, or when they were retired so far, we get down again. And I said to Captain, because it was cold, you know, we'd been frozen in the night time because it was March, and it was very cold, and we'd no overcoats or anything, we would have left them behind. And there was a big hut there. What we knew they were there from being at Courcelles before, when we were out of the line once. And I said, there's the stores down there. I said, if they're going to the lads, I said, they can get a blanket, you know, a piece. And then we can wrap that round us when we get, you know, overnight when we're lying down. I said, and if we get a sandbag as they're going in, I said, get a sandbag and pick anything up they can. I don't care, like tea, sugar, milk, or anything, you know, what they could get hold of, dates, anything, you know, we used to have all sorts in there. And I said, if they do that, I said, and then... One go in and we'll pass along the line, you know, go along the line. Then they'll have to go forward to the end of the line where they are now towards Ashley Pettit and Ashley Grand. And we were stretched out and doing that and by the whole day. Of course, we were firing. And I said, and get a bandolier of ammunition as you pass through. Get a bandolier of ammunition as well, you know. And... That passed. So that night came again, and they drove at morning. I were absolutely astounded. Look behind us, and there's two batteries of artillery, the Church battery and the Cumberland battery of the 18-pounders. So of course they were all ready, and as we went through them, and they were opened fire as soon as we got past them. They opened, you know, with open sights into the Germans, and you could see them. Every shell that burst, the Germans fell, you know, and then they make it up again, and they were just coming on. Now, I don't know how long, I can't remember, I've forgotten all about everything from that until... I remember them carrying me out because we got to a point, and it was the highest point that there was for about 25 miles by all accounts. And we had an order, the orders came through from Solly Flood, that they were the brigade general, and to say that we had to position at any cost. And I can't, you know, I can only remember because we were sitting in the shallow trench and they were up to the, well, about 4 inch of water, I dare say it were, something like that, you know, above our boots anyway. And they were stood in this water, and next thing I remember was being carried out because I couldn't walk. I got fibrositis of the spine, and it affected. I couldn't move my legs. They carried me out, and I was down in the hospital in from that.
I just want to ask, during this period, you'd been made company sergeant major, hadn't you?
Well, when I got back, when we went out of the line again.
Oh, so at this point,
yeah, after that was yes, that was before. I mean, this from March. You see, because I came home on leave in August.
Let's keep it in order then.
Yeah, well.
So, you obviously were very poorly.
Well, no, I was terrible because I couldn't walk. And I was sent down to Catholic Clearing Station. But you see, they were short of NCOs and they sent over home unless they were absolutely necessary. So, of course, they kept me there. I don't know, there about a fortnight, I think. And then, in the meantime, they were giving me medicine, one thing or another, and they were having treatment for it. And after a fortnight, I was there, and I said, for goodness sake, send me back to the battalion. I was absolutely fed up, you know, because I got walking again. And
was there any treatment they gave you?
Well, I don't know if therapy, I suppose. I don't know if therapy or, you know, I had a place, I think it was K, a place called KU, I think, on the coast. I can't just remember.
That's all right.
But anyway, I know that I could just got walking, one foot in front of the other, and it took me an hour, I think it were, to get down to a little S-tam that. It was only a little wooden hut shack like, and they made it into a little, they were selling beer. Two or three of the French there, you know, were selling beer in this place. And they had a little garden round, and there were a lot of Yanks came there in the, while we were there. I got back to the battalion. And they were out on rest. They'd come out and they were out on rest, and they were being made up, waiting for reserves to come from England and make them. I can't tell you. I've forgotten all about the places, where we were, what we were. I don't know the place at all. I can't tell you.
Just give us some impressions of what. So you rejoined the battalion.
Yeah, well, we were out on rest and. We moved from one place to another, I know, and I've forgotten now just how things went until, we've been training to go over the top again at Berber. No, that wasn't the same, no, I'm getting mixed up in the other one. We've been out.
Were you at Dunkirk and Newport?
Yeah, well, that's right. We went to Dunkirk, Newport, and Dunkirk Baines. That were on the coast. Between. And I can't, my memory, it's gone from that. Until.
What's the next thing you do remember?
I know, remember, we were training for this job going over the top.